When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Performance-enhancing drugs aren't just for top athletes. Is your son having a protein shake every morning? We are talking about boys and performance-enhancing drugs. Here's what you need to know. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-host, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being here. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. Performance-enhancing drugs are more common than you may think, and not just for top athletes. If your son is an athlete or a wannabe athlete, or if he's just on social media, he's likely heard of performance-enhancing drugs and may know a lot more about them than you might think. And are you aware of what's out there? Joining us for the second time this year is Kyle Ganson. In our earlier episode, we talked with Kyle about his research around boys and body image and muscle dysmorphia. And we knew we needed to have him back to round out the discussion by talking about performance-enhancing drugs. Welcome back, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me again. I really appreciate it.
You know, I thought about you as I was listening to a podcast about Lance Armstrong and the world of cycling and the seemingly accepted use of performance-enhancing drugs, because you can't win the Tour de France without drugs. So that was in, I think, 2016, 2018, somewhere in there. Have we come any distance since then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm not an expert in what's happening in cycling now, though I know that there's a lot of efforts by, you know, like the World Anti-Doping Agency or WADA, you know, trying to like wean out doping in all of sports as much as possible. And they have a very long and detailed list of substances and compounds and whatnot that are not are prohibited in different sports. Where I think we are now, as far as performance enhancers, I mean, there's a very broad list. I mean, you were even in the introduction, you were speaking about drugs specifically, but I think we can even expand that to thinking about dietary supplements or other substances that are not illegal. They're actually perfectly legal and, you know, readily available, particularly for young people. You know, they're sort of purported to help you with your performance and help you with your building strength and maybe help you adjust your appearance in some particular way. But there's, you know, not a lot of research on them. And there's lots of sort of nuance to them that I'm sure we'll go into.
Yeah. So give us the rundown. Our sons likely aren't, you know, high performing athletes at this point. So give us the rundown of what we as parents might come across in, say, our son's high school athletic career.
And sure, what our boys may come across online.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a great question. So I think parents probably should know about things like protein supplements, like whey protein or, you know, like vegan protein supplements, like pea protein, et cetera. So generally, protein supplements are very, very commonly used. You can purchase them basically anywhere, grocery stores, online, pharmacies, health food stores, supplement stores, obviously. And those are generally most commonly used. In studies that we've done, we've shown that upwards of 80% of boys have used whey protein or some sort of protein supplement in the last 12 months. So really, really common, generally like fairly benign. Again, we can go into some nuanced detail about how that may be. Like protein overconsumption can obviously be a problem that can sort of strain the body in particular ways and actually doesn't really help you do anything because your body can only absorb so much of it. Mm. So protein is definitely one thing. Protein supplements. And then another one would be creatine is also very common, creatine monohydrate. Again, it's another powdered form, and you mix it with a liquid. Creatine is sort of meant to help you with your sort of building of strength, sort of muscle repair, even bone health, things like that. So, you know, people do take it for a variety of different reasons. One of the things that it does do actually, it helps you retain water. And so a lot of people who use creatine often feel more muscular or feel stronger or feel bulkier. But that some of that is actually just water weight that's in your muscles. And then when you stop taking it, you actually lose some of that water weight and some of that water sort of density. And so you kind of see a deflation of your muscles, which can be obviously create some body image issues for many young people. So those are probably the two most common. I mean, there's definitely like a plethora of others, like amino acids are other supplements that are commonly used. Again, those can be found in like powders or little capsules that people take. And amino acids are strictly like compounds that are helped to build protein and I'm sorry, build muscle. So, it's meant to sort of help with that process. Pre-workout supplements, dietary supplements like powders and drinks are obviously very, very common. Those are sort of multi-ingredient products. So they have things like creatine in them, amino acids. They definitely have caffeine in them. Most of them have caffeine in them, and pretty high levels of caffeine. And then also like sweeteners, right? And it's a powder usually that you're supposed to sort of mix with a liquid, and then you drink it before workout. And some of them have upwards of like 300 milligrams of caffeine per serving, which is a lot. I think a typical cup of coffee has about 100 or so. So it's a lot of caffeine. And so people sometimes feel very jittery. Sometimes people have a lot of like heart palpitations. There's been different reports of people having like onset of like psychosis or like sort of really high panic sort of thinking. So the high level of caffeine is something to be concerned about, especially for young developing boys.
Especially for young developing boys who that pre-workout supplement is not likely the only caffeine they're drinking or intaking that day. Like they'll probably drink that and then they'll have, Mountain Dew or an energy drink or something else later in the day too.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, definitely true for sure. I mean, energy drinks are also very common. Those are some of the main like sort of dietary supplements that you'd find sort of very commonly at like any grocery store or sort of health food store, et cetera. I think there are others out there that are maybe less commonly used that we could go into if we wanted to. But I think as far as like the drugs or like illegal substances, obviously anabolic androgenic steroids or just sort of steroids if we want to call them that, are synthetic hormones basically, and they sort of mimic testosterone in the body and they're extremely effective. They're illicit obviously to manufacture and sell, and so you really sh you shouldn't be using them. They're quite dangerous because you're purchasing them on the black market, and so you might not even know what you're taking. It's very risky in that way. And then obviously there's different sort of side effects that can come from that physiologically, of course. That said, sadly, testosterone and steroids are actually extremely effective. And that's why so many people who are really, really persistent on trying to build muscle mass and strength use them, because you can actually build muscle just by sitting on your couch. And you can imagine if someone's like exercising and weight training very particularly and watching their diet in a very particular way, they can really build the muscle mass that they really want. But again, that can be problematic in some ways, of course.
Before we get into the details of some of these things, I want to ask for like a kind of a contextualizing question. So
Sure.
one of the issues for boys, for men, is just the images that they are seeing are so much more like bulked up and ripped than even 20 years ago, for sure, even 10 years ago. I believe that I have heard, and I don't have any way to verify this, and I'm not sure you do either, but let you know, like when these movie stars are bulking up for their superhero roles, that it's kind of this like known secret that they may be using some of these testosterone and steroids, and then also these extremely strict diets, workout routines, and then totally dehydrating to really accent the definition of the muscles. What can you tell us about that? Because I think it's important, then we can have these conversations with our sons to say, what you are seeing, this is not just diet and exercise.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Actually, I saw something on social media the other day that was talking about this as well. Funny that we're talking about social media, but yeah, and they were sort of saying that like it was a post by someone. I can't remember. It was one of the guys from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Is that the name of the show? I can't remember. Yeah. So one of the guys from that show, he had a picture of himself kind of with like a bit of a maybe a big of a belly, kind of in the show during that time. And then there was a photo of him like for I think one of the newer seasons, and he was like bulked up and like kind of more defined. And he kind of wrote like this sarcastic, post to it that was basically like, in order for me to change from this to that, I had to like work out 6 days a week. I had a personal trainer, a dietitian. I had someone telling me exactly how much to eat, when to eat, how much to sleep. I was getting enough. Like he went through this whole nuanced, detailed process of which he went through. Now, I don't know if he left out things like using steroids or some other sort of
Yeah.
illicit substance. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. Who knows? And maybe it's not really as important. But what the real important takeaway for me is that in order for those actors to like transform their bodies in 6 months or 3 months, it really just comes down to that's their job. Like they literally wake up and they go to the gym and they have people helping them and they have chefs that are cooking food for them and dietitians who are telling them how much to eat and all that type of stuff, which obviously for most people in the world, that's not possible. And certainly many, many boys, right? They're like going to school, they're maybe participating in sports, they have homework to do, they want to hang out with their friends. There's just not enough hours in the day. They don't have the resources to have a personal trainer and, a chef and all that kind of stuff. Though maybe parents feel like chefs sometimes, but
Indeed. I do think
but
it's helpful that there are a few male stars who have come out and said, I've done this and it wasn't worth it. Zac Efron is one who has done, extreme body things for his movies, Baywatch, all that. And he's like, I wouldn't do that again. I think, I'm not sure, Channing Tatum maybe also. So,
Yeah, it's interesting to track those trends of those people kind of reporting it because I think they do experience a lot of distress. I mean, it's really stressful to change your body in that way. And also people who have gone like in very high swings of ups and downs, like being very muscular and then maybe for a different role, maybe reducing their body weight to a more thin or emaciated role or something like that, right? So that those sort of body swings are actually, I think, can be really harmful for people and really mentally harmful for them as well.
And meanwhile, we have adolescent boys, generally speaking, tween adolescent boys whose bodies are growing and changing. And there's some of this is biology, development, and yet, I mean, I remember being a teen. Like, you want to look grown up as soon as possible when you're a kid for some reason. And then they see all of this online. And then they think, I mean, a protein supplement, how can that be bad?
It's a good question. I think, well, first of all, I think your point about seeing things online is really, really important because most of the people that I've done several interviews and some studies talking to people about their use of these different dietary supplements and even steroids as well. And even for like, again, the sort of more benign, quote unquote, benign substances like creatine or whey protein, they're finding the information online. They're going online, they're going to YouTube, they're looking at influencers, and there's a plethora of information about how to use these different supplements, what the best like protocol is, which one is the best one that has the least amount of carbs, for example, the protein ratio, like things like that are all of where they're getting that information. And so it's really important, I think, for parents just to recognize that. It's not to say that you have to take away social media, but most kids are not going to like a peer-reviewed article or going to the doctor and talking to the doctor about it. They're probably finding it from influencers online who oftentimes have an ulterior motive, right? A financial motive, right? The more views they get, if they use discount codes, right? They're getting kickbacks for all that stuff. And so that's not to say that that's a bad or terrible business model. It's more just to say we need to be aware of that, right? Kids need to be informed about that process that, you're hearing so and so who has 20,000 views that you should definitely use this product, but that person is selling that product because they're getting something back, right? So I think that's a really, really important, point, and sort of emphasizing just the media literacy point for parents to sort of translate to their kids as much as possible is like really, really crucial.
And we can bet that they're probably not reading the article about I went from this to this and this is how it happened. They're not going to spend the time to read that. They're looking at the quick sound bite.
Exactly, right, exactly. And they, I think they're compelled to, increase their performance. Maybe they're trying to get a scholarship for university or something. Maybe they do just want to feel stronger, be more athletic, and that's fair, right? Those are fair goals, and I think it's really important for, parents and, providers to really understand what are the motivations here, right? Because sometimes those motivations start out very benign of like, I just want to be a stronger athlete, or, I want to get that scholarship, or I just want to go to the gym and feel better about my body, right? And that may be that's very fair, but again, you can see how it can quickly turn into, oh, I don't look like that person quite yet, or why are they performing so much better than me? That comparison kicks in, and that can obviously sort of spiral down to some dangerous places.
All this information can feel super overwhelming, but we'll continue to sort through it
after these messages from our sponsors.
This is where I think it gets so overwhelming too, because there is this plethora of information. There's the entire internet. There's all the influencers, all the YouTube videos, all the peer-reviewed studies. Kyle, my degree is in nursing. I've written about healthcare for, 20 plus years. I am still not sure. How much protein do I need at this point in my life? Where do I find that reliable information? It's conflicting. Some people say, well, if you're an American, industrialized country, you're probably already getting enough protein from your diet. And others are like, well, these guidelines are sorely out of date. I'm more media literate than your average 15-year-old boy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And quite honestly, I don't even know that answer, right? Like, I think that's right. There's so much discrepancy between perspectives, disciplines, maybe different studies would tell you different things. So yeah, I think that's where like conversations with doctors, right? I mean, I think going to trusted professionals, again, they may not have the perfect answer, but hopefully what they can do is help you, help families, help parents, help kids kind of work through, okay, what are your goals? What are your motivations here? And what do you need in order to do to sort of meet those goals? And maybe it is having a protein supplement every couple of days or after a workout, because that helps your body kind of build the muscle that it needs to build and repair after that workout. And again, that's likely totally benign and an okay process for some people, but maybe not. Maybe you don't need that. Maybe you're getting enough protein, or maybe you can get enough calories and protein and amino acids through other, natural, quote unquote, natural foods, like whole foods, things like that. So I think those conversations become just really important about trying to personalize the care, right? Because you can get lost in the web of virtual online information spaces that tell you things that are very generic or just not relevant to who you are.
In your studies, have you been able to highlight, are there specific sports communities that kind of lean this way, or other cultural groups that lean towards these supplements?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think athletes generally are more interested in using these, kind of supplements and substances. Certainly people who are engaging in different weight training or sports that are weight related. So even things like, American football or like wrestling, even like hockey, where the body is like the physicality of the body becomes very important. That said, I've also heard from people who are like competitive runners, right? That like, they do whey protein or sort of creatine after their workouts because it helps their runs, their long runs, right? It helps their body kind of replenish nutrients that it might have depleted during the long run. So I think it's really dependent on the sort of person and their interest in sort of what their goals are, right? Is their goal to kind of, help some sort of support? Like a dietary supplement is just that, right? It's meant to supplement the diet. I think that's sort of going to what is the goal of the person and in their sports or in their athletics that is relevant for them.
In your research, do you have any insight on how often or how commonly perhaps maybe boys are directed or pointed or suggested towards supplements by coaches, for instance?
I don't have empirical data per se on that. I mean, in the kind of conversations I've had with people, we actually developed a model where we tried to understand like the engagement process that people go through as they engage in muscularity oriented behaviors. And so that included obviously like supplement and, performance enhancing drug use. And so they didn't really specifically say like someone's like coach directed me to do, like, you have to do this kind of thing. But oftentimes people were being introduced to supplements or even steroids from the people that they were around. So other people in the gym, others, kids on their teams, even partners, like, if they're in like a relationship, even family members, like, recommending them do certain, use certain supplements. Yeah. So like the sort of entry point is often the people who are closest. And then from there, it kind of expands out to, oh, okay, like, I'm kind of curious about this. This person said it's safe. They do it, so I trust them. And then they go to like the internet, right? They go to figure out like, what is everybody else using? What else should I try? Or how else can I use this stuff, to sort of figure out what's the best process for them. I will say too, that I think is really important to note is that often people are like young kids, boys, like they're not really nilly with this stuff. Like they actually spend a lot of time. Most of them spend a lot of time talking about it and thinking about it, researching it. There's often like a very specific decision-making process that they go through of like, is this like financially feasible for me? Do I like the taste of it? Does it feel safe enough, or like, does it fit into my routine? Like some people, for example, I spoke to said like they didn't do pre-workout because every time they did it, they just felt too jittery, and that was enough to like make them not want to do it, and they were fine just like having a cup of coffee before their workout. So, people actually did a lot to to sort of decipher like what's the best thing and best protocol and routine for me, which again just goes back to that sort of individualized approach, right? We have to kind of go and think about what's the best approach for this young person sitting in front of me, as parents, as coaches, as providers, how do I both best support them in their process and their goals?
It sounds like there's a lot of opportunity here for positive learning and conversation and research. So extrapolating a little bit from that, let's say, all of a sudden in the kitchen or in the bathroom, there appears this huge tub of whey protein. I'm a little freaked out because I've heard all this stuff. Based on what you've said so far, I'm guessing that freaking out and yelling at him and why would you do this and this is stupid is probably not the most helpful route to go.
No, I would 100% agree with you. And I think the way that I actually the approach that I take, I'm actually happy to sort of like send you all an article that we just like an editorial that I just published that was sort of talking about this, which is, really trying to take a harm reduction approach to all this. Like, we can try to get kids and boys to stop using this stuff. But the reality is that they're likely have peers who are using it. They have coaches who may be recommending it. Maybe they feel like it actually helps them. So it's really going to be hard for us to say abstinence is the way to go. And so if we can apply notions of harm reduction to these supplements and substances, just like we do for, other sort of illicit drugs or alcohol, et cetera, and other tons of other like, health behaviors like sexual health and putting on a
Absolutely.
seatbelt at night, out in the car, and like putting on sunscreen, and like those are all harm reduction approaches. So if we can take that approach, we actually can probably make more impact. And so, yeah, I think I probably mentioned this in our last podcast is that respectful curiosity. Again, really trying to ask questions, get an understanding of what do they know about this stuff? What's the motivation for use? How much are they using? Who else is using it with them? Where did they purchase it? Where are they gathering the information, right? Trying to join with them as much as possible in order to understand the process they're going through. And then again, that can lead you to different entry points of providing new information or recommending they speak to someone else, or hey, let's go talk to.
This episode is sponsored by Heart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk. And ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only US-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast, and it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer, and additional terms and conditions may apply. We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet. But a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten easy melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve, and I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin down.
Yeah, no, and they taste good. And They're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys.
The doctor, you know, I'm happy to like support you in this. How can we, you know, make sure this is sufficient for you? You know, so I think that's the most effective approach, is just being alongside with them. And again, I think that also comes with sort of potential challenges, like are parents the one who are very much pushing it, or are they motivated by their own kind of motivations of like, they really want their kid to get a scholarship, or, you know, they're the coach of the team themselves and they want their kid to be the best. Right.
Yeah.
And so that can create some tension as well. But I think either way, it's like important to have that kind of overall mentality of harm reduction, providing information, you know, what are the ways in which we can mitigate any type of risk that may happen as far as using these supplements and substances.
It feels like it's also important to remember that most of the time, it sounds like the root impulse is a healthy one, right? I mean, you likely have a boy who wants to feel good in his body, who wants his body to perform well, who wants to be healthy, as he defines that. Those are good goals. So if you can recognize that this is the root and figure out how to work with him to achieve his goals. I mean, Janet, how many times have we said that, like, once you're working together, it's a lot easier than if you're, going cross purposes.
Yeah, I think it's very true. There's likely multiple goals, and I think you're totally right. And the sort of themes that came up in our study around these supplements and these behaviors is, you know, we kind of talked about as balancing aesthetic, health, and functional goals. So there was definitely an aesthetic component of it, is like, I want my body to look a certain way. I feel better about my body when it looks this way. This is how, you know, maybe again, feeling those internalized pressures of how a male body should look. Mm-hmm. But that was balanced with like a notion of health. Like, I want to be stronger so I can take care of my body, can sort of have more longevity, or I can perform better at my sport or whatever. And then that functional space, right? Like, that's, you know, like, I want to be stronger so I can like lift more things, or I can like, again, perform in my athletics or my sport, you know, better than my peers, or at the highest level possible, mm-hmm. Or just be able to like carry my backpack that has 5 textbooks in it, you know, things like that become like, that's the sort of, I think, motivations, is they're just trying to balance all that.
Yeah.
And again, if you can get in and understand those motivations, like you're saying, you can work with them to help them find the solutions and the safety around the use that they have.
So this is all like looking in the present. Here you are with your teenager looking ahead to college, but you've also done research in the more long-term effects of this, of using these legal and illegal substances. What have you found out from your research?
More about the long-term effects of illegal and legal performance-enhancing drugs after these messages from our sponsors.
Yeah, something we've done is we've tried to look at, what are the sort of behavioral correlates, basically, or associations with using these different supplements and substances. And I think I'll preface this by saying that based on our conversation, as we've been having, is like there is a range of people who are using these different supplements and substances. And so there are likely people who are using them quite, you know, quote unquote, appropriately, like maybe mm-hmm. they're using a protein shake or creatine kind of semi-regularly during their workouts, after their workouts, et cetera, and it's totally fine. And there are likely people who are using, you know, some extreme levels of these different substances. They're really obsessive about their bodies or their performance, or they're using like many different mm. products, you know. And so, you know, you can imagine those people maybe are at greater risk for some of the sort of effects that I'll share. But we have found that like young people who engage in the use of like these dietary supplements like creatine or whey protein are more likely to have like problematic alcohol use behaviors, like binge drinking. They're more likely to engage in like criminal activity or criminal offending, like stealing or property damage or getting into physical fights. You know, we found similar findings around like sexual health behaviors. So maybe having more sexual partners around the same time or having a greater number of sexual partners. Certainly future use of anabolic steroids is there's a high risk for that. Like, and I've shown that in multiple studies that if you use like whey protein, creatine, any of these dietary supplements, you're more likely at later points in your life to use anabolic steroids, which makes a logical sense. And we can go into that. But also things like eating disorder pathology, muscle dysmorphia pathology. And the surprising thing that we found was that actually the sort of outcomes that I've just listed are actually very similar. These sort of social outcomes are very similar to people who use steroids. And so what that likely means to me is that there's a risk profile, right? There's a profile of people who are using these different substances that sort of have higher propensity to engage in some risky behavior, other risky behavior, right? Like sexual risk or intimate partner violence or criminal offending, right? Or drinking, you know, binge drinking. So, you know, for the vast majority, you're probably going to be generally okay. You might have some side effects like gastrointestinal issues or acne or, you know, headaches or something, right? That most people sort of do experience at some point using different dietary supplements. But for some people, they're going to sort of fall within a risk profile where they maybe engage in, you know, more social risk behaviors. And again, maybe potentially use steroids in the future or things like that.
Parents, don't freak out.
Yeah. Don't freak out. Yeah. Don't freak out. It's true. I mean, again, this is about like kind of understanding, you know, the sort of nuances of the profiles of people who engage in this type of stuff. And I think the thing that I will say that I think is maybe an underlying mechanism here is, you know, the sort of masculine norms, right? That socialization process that, you know, there's a really strong link between masculinity and muscularity. So, you know, and sort of if you are a more muscular person, a stronger person, you're perceived as more masculine, you feel more masculine, you might display more of those masculine traits like aggression or risk taking. And so, again, it makes sense that if you are in the gym around people who are probably highly, you know, masculine oriented, you know, engaging in some risk behaviors like maybe steroid use or other sort of, you know, problematic behaviors, you know, it could be easily seen how that person would fall into a similar profile or similar pattern. And that may just increase risk to engage in other risky, you know, social risk behaviors.
You shared early on, I think the statistic was like 80% have tried at least protein supplements. Was that right?
Yeah. So, you know, in a variety of studies, we've shown that anywhere between like 50 and 80% have used, you know, whey protein. So it's really, and that's sort of across like lifetime use, past 12 months use. So somewhere in the 50 to 80% of boys have used whey protein supplements.
Parents, in an attempt to help you not freak out quite so much, I have not done research on this, but I've lived with 4 boys. And who they've gone through their teenage years, young adult, like they're right in this age range right now. So this is what it's looked like in my house. Big tub of whey protein shows up. Maybe a couple scoops get used out of it. And that's the end of it. And I do think that is a likely story for a lot of people. I mean, Kyle, do you have any professional insight on that or from your research? What can you add to that?
I think maybe more just like anecdotally, it's like, you know, like actually protein powder like doesn't taste very good. Like it's generally not a very good thing to drink. It's not tasty. And so, yeah, I think it's like another, you know, I think people just like, you know, we traditionally see people go through like dieting practices. Like it's a similar process. Like people diet for a week and then they're like, ah, screw it, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Right. And so I think it has a similar, it's about a health behavior, right? It's a changing of a health behavior. It's making change in your sort of daily process. And so, yeah, I think for a lot of people, especially kids, right, who are distracted by many different, you know, different distractions, you know, it's hard to stay with kind of these different, you know, protocols and processes around using supplements and muscle building and all that kind of stuff.
And the stuff's not cheap, generally speaking, either. I mean, you know, when it's a choice of spending my money on this or on something else, they may choose something else. This is not true for everybody. Definitely, you have talked to boys and young men who have really gone down this road of coming up with a very, very strict regimen and stuck to it for a long time. But, you know, parents, when the stuff first comes home, kind of wait and see what happens. Kyle shared this respectful curiosity. That's such a great place to always, always start. And if you see this becoming a regular habit and persistent and you see behaviors, and maybe you see Kyle, like, you know, this son spending more and more time at the gym and being more concerned about his food intake, is that time for a different level of discussions, perhaps?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, again, I think thinking about like the bringing of the tub into the house is probably like maybe a minor yellow flag, right? It's like a faded yellow flag, right? Because again, it's just so common for boys to sort of experiment with this type of stuff and again, be pressured in their social communities to try it. And so again, that may just raise some sort of like initial thoughts. But yeah, I think the more you start to see some more, you know, obsession around the workout routine, or they're much more specific about the different foods they're eating because they want to make sure they're getting different macronutrients and they're trying to count all the grams of protein and carbohydrates and all that that they're trying to consume. Or maybe they start to bring in other supplements like creatine and amino acids and pre-workout, you know, that just adds to the number of sort of supplements that they're using, which again, may be very benign and okay, but for some people, it might cause some side effects. It may be there's sort of interactions that are happening there. It might be disrupting their sleep because they're, you know, they're taking pre-workout at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and be going to work out for an hour and then it's 5 o'clock. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's like a kind of a snowball effect, right? So you have to kind of weigh those things. But yeah, that's maybe when you start to have more serious conversations. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not about saying no per se. It's just about being understanding of what's happening and what the motivations are. And again, pointing them in the directions that might help them get information that's going to, you know, provide the most insight and helpful direction for them.
Let's go next level, broader. Mm-hmm. What about health providers talking about these things? But also then, you know, we always have to go to the policy level. What's happening in state and federal policy? Should there be any regulation?
It's a really good question. So, so starting with healthcare providers, actually, you know, it's really unclear to me, and it's some of the areas of research that I'm embarking on now is trying to understand what do healthcare providers do. Do they even assess? Like, do they ask these questions of young people coming into their room? Because I would be willing to bet that most of them are not. And even if they are, they might even recommend some of these things, right? They might even say, oh, you should, you know, use some, you know, whey protein or creatine, right? They may. Who knows? And again, that's not the wrong recommendation to give. I'm just saying that they might be sort of, mm-hmm. you know, kind of offering it as a suggestion. So one of the areas I'm working on here in Canada is actually we're going to ask pediatricians about, first of all, what's their knowledge level of these different supplements and substances? And then also, do they actually screen for it in their practice? And then from there, we're actually asking them if they've ever seen kids in their practice, and this would be inclusive of all genders, who have had some kind of adverse event related to the use of their dietary supplements or substances like steroids or whatnot. This is going to get a really good pulse because it goes out to about 3,000, going out to about 3,000 pediatricians here in Canada. And so it really give us a pulse of like, are they asking these questions? How knowledgeable are they of these things? And are they even seeing anything in their practice that would be raising alarms for us? So I think that's the first place to start is like, I hope that healthcare providers start to recognize some of the harms of these products potentially, but also just again implementing some of those harm reduction approaches, you know, providing information, monitoring use, you know, kind of following up with use. Again, especially because for kids who are maybe more interested in this and they're starting to move down a path of, you know, a bit more intention, a bit more engagement, that could set up a process of maybe using steroids at some point down the future. And so a provider, it would be really good for them to be kind of tracking that and providing that oversight over time.
Listeners, if any of you are healthcare providers or, you know, if you are parents and this is a topic that has been discussed or frankly, you know, not handled well, in your opinion, we would love to hear from you. You know, drop us a line, send us a note. We can even connect you with Kyle if you'd like, because this is information that's helpful to all of us. Really, we are all have a strong interest in keeping our boys safe and healthy.
I would love to know what people are doing. So definitely great. Yeah. And then as the policy space, I will say something that I didn't really say at the onset, though I maybe alluded to it, is in both the US and Canada, and I'll just use these two countries as examples, but you know, these dietary supplements in particular are very loosely regulated. And so there's a lot of emphasis on the industry to really kind of regulate itself and provide evidence of, you know, kind of any type of efficacy or safety or purity of the products before going to market. Again, you can imagine, I think there's been a study that's shown that like the dietary supplement industry is going to be like, I want to say like close to $300 billion by like 2028 or something like that. So it's just a massive industry that again has a lot of power within, the political space to sort of potentially sort of get through loopholes. Like they don't go through, these products don't go through like the FDA like a pharmaceutical does, where there's clinical trials, et cetera, et cetera. This is really it's really kind of watered down approach to getting these products to market. And so that just creates some potential issues, right? Because there has been studies that have shown that they're like the products can be adulterated, so like actually have stimulants or steroids in them, or even mislabeled. So what's actually in the product is not on the label. There's regulatory alerts that are, kind of go out that say like, oh, this product has too much, caffeine in it, or it has this in it, it shouldn't have. And so there are a lot of regulatory alerts that do come out that sort of emphasize these products. And actually what I would also say is that in both the US and Canada, there is adverse reporting databases. So while they're probably not very well used because I don't think a lot of people know about them, but if you're a young person or a parent, and you see the tub of whatever come into the room, you actually could go online to the, like, I can't remember what the specific websites are off the top of my head, but you can go online and search for the adverse reporting database, and you can see if the product has been associated with any adverse events that people have experiences, like, physical health symptoms, et cetera. So that those resources are out there. And that goes into the policy space, which is that, some states in the US, for example, have tried to implement bills that have tried to restrict the age of sale. So tell those people, under 18 can't purchase them, or like moving them kind of behind the counter, quote unquote. So that they're sort of less accessible to young people. My thinking is that those are really like good initiatives, and I think they're smart, and they can likely make impact. That being said, they really, from my knowledge, I think there's like four or five states that have put these bills up for vote, and I don't think any of them have actually passed. Actually, California had a bill, but it was vetoed by the governor due to lack of sufficient evidence that it would be effective. And so that's sort of my approach and my thinking is we actually need to reframe the problem, not to an age problem, which goes back to this editorial I was mentioning, which is like, it's not really about age, it's about knowledge. And so if we actually put in laws and regulations around knowledge development, around providing information to people like on the packets about, hey, what are the potential risks here? Or, again, like just or the pharmacist or whoever the store person has to provide information to them, that is probably going to be way more effective because, here in Canada, for example, like on cigarette packets, there's like all these graphic images of people who have cancer, right? And like, I think for a lot of people, that probably deters some use, especially for young people. And so I think that's something we should be thinking about is how do we sort of present the knowledge in a very succinct and clear way to hopefully kind of make use safer or prevent use altogether.
Especially when you set up like age restrictions. Sounds like a good idea. Like, I don't really want my 13-year-old buying this stuff. I don't. However, I think we all know, if we're honest with ourselves, determined teenagers are the most creative, innovative, persistent humans on this planet. And so sometimes that kind of legislation can have this negative, unintended effect where now they're going through unregulated channels and they're buying stuff from random people on the internet from who knows where, which seems to increase the likelihood that it will be an adulterated substance. So that's no good either. Education, right, Kyle?
I think so. I agree with you, right? Like the more limits you put on kids, the more they want to push back against them and find the loopholes. And again, that's like part of adolescent development, and I support that 100% when it's done safely. But I agree. I think if we can make it safer for them to sort of access the products, get information, have conversations with the right people. That ultimately, I think, is going to lead to better outcomes than if we just say, like, you can't use this, because that's going to likely lead people to like finding it from their friends or buying it from unreputable sources, et cetera.
This has been so informative, Kyle. Thank you for all the work you're doing, all the research you're doing. Where can our listeners find out more? I mean, some of them might want to read peer-reviewed articles. And we know that Jen will put lots of links in the show notes.
I'm definitely going to link Kyle's editorial in the show notes. I'm going to do my best to find the adverse events reporting so I can link that in there for you. But yes, Kyle, where can people learn more?
That's actually a really good question. Where can people learn more about this stuff? Because I think, even as a researcher, like I often find that, where the most information is often in sources that are maybe less reputable, like bodybuilding.com or like, Muscle and Fitness magazine, right? And so it is actually hard to find good reputable sources. I mean, I do think that like WebMD, for example, does have some, pretty clear information that people could go to and learn some more information, get some more information if they needed. I mean, like I mentioned, like the FDA, for example, they have sometimes they have sort of bulletins or things that are on their website that do provide information. Generally, I think you can find much more information on like steroids and sort of the harms around steroids and sort of the nuances of steroids, like explanations of what steroids are, et cetera. Again, because those are illegal substances. And so I think there's like a really strong effort to kind of provide information and sort of deter use in that way. But I think these dietary supplements is it's really like a free-for-all out there. You kind of have to like our teens, right? We have to kind of like suss through the information as best we can and try to understand, what's being provided to us and maybe go to multiple sources to see if there's, kind of overlap in their, kind of information or very, different information. So and I also will say too, like, obviously there is peer review literature on some of this stuff. Again, it's sort of sparse in many ways, but it's out there and you can find some of it if you need it.
Thank you, Kyle. We're so glad that you are willing to come back and that we'd love to probably have you on again in the future. This is really important work that you're doing. So thank you for that. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much. I really appreciate you choosing this topic. I think, I mean, obviously, as you can probably imagine from the conversation, I'm pretty enthusiastic about it. And I think there's just a lot of opportunity for parents and families and doctors and providers like to really make a big difference here. And yeah, I think there's just tons of opportunity here to sort of chart a new path, which I think is really helpful and important.
We hope this episode has informed you and given you a new perspective and new information on performance-enhancing substances. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Maybe consider sharing this episode with a coach that you know in your life. And we do appreciate you sharing the On Boys Parenting Podcast with others in your world. And thank you too for supporting our sponsors, being here, supporting our sponsors. All of that means so much to us. Thank you.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.